Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is May 25th, 2010, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 170, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, unemployed rockstar wannabe. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM.
Pew, 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 pew. Pew, 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 pew.
At macobserver.com. Thank you, Melissa.
Yes, thank you so much. Now, I have to point out that my laugh at your title this week has to have been one of the most unattractive sounds we've ever had in the show.
I don't know about that. There's my entire voice this week. I'm sick again. So, you know, my whole voice is just not all that attractive.
Well, you know, it's a matter of perspective. I'm sure that there's plenty of people out there that are thinking, my, that sounds like a sexy gravity voice.
No doubt. No doubt. And my title was in reference to the fact that I've left the atomic love bombs, just for the record.
And as I have said many times, I am so looking forward to your first solo album.
I am looking forward to my next project for sure. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting, but I wish the band well, and I think you're going to hear some really good things coming out of them later this year.
No doubt, and good things coming from you soon, too, hopefully.
Yep, but Push Me Under, which I wrote, is going to remain our theme song, I guess. You cool with that, Jeff?
I'm totally cool with that.
Good. Yay.
Yeah, because we've already got it. We're using it. You wrote it, and it sounds good.
Thank you. Thank
you. And just because you're not part of the band anymore doesn't mean the band suddenly sucks.
No. Joe's a fantastic songwriter, and I can't wait for the next album to come out. It was just time for me to leave and work on some other things, and it was a good decision for me.
Yeah, and you know, you're an incredibly talented artist, and your talent just has to, you have to go along for the ride.
I, what does that mean?
I was really afraid you're going to ask. I think it just sounded good. And
sorry to bust you on that. So let's just get to the show.
All right. A new study says iPad owners are reading more. Google made Android to save us from Apple. And Dell is streaking into the tablet market.
Oh, my. ChangeWave Research released the results of a new consumer survey on Thursday, that's last Thursday, that shows demand for the iPad is high and that the device is already having a major impact on the e-book reader or e-reader market. Among other things, ChangeWave found that more iPad users are reading magazines and newspapers on their devices than are owners of other e-reader devices. The survey was conducted among 3,174 consumers with the purpose of measuring future demand for the iPad, and then the company even conducted a second survey of 153 of those people who already owned an iPad to find out what they thought of the device and how they were using it. Quote, importantly, the company said, fully half of the iPad e-readers say they read newspapers. Boy, I'm going to try that again, Jeff. Importantly, fully half of iPad e-readers say they read newspapers on their tablet devices compared to just 14% of other e-reader owners. Likewise, 38% of iPad e-readers say they read magazines compared to 11% of other e-reader owners, unquote. Lastly, the company said that iPad owners were happy with their purchases, with owners reporting similar satisfaction levels to those Apple achieved with the iPhone, but in only a few weeks.
And Google created Android OS in order to keep Apple from having too much control over the mobile devices market. That's according to Vic Gundotra, vice president of engineering at Google. Mr. Gundotra refrained from mentioning Apple CEO Steve Jobs by name, but his keynote included pointed lines such as, quote, if we did not act, we faced a draconian future where
one man, one phone, one carrier with a future.
That's a future you don't want. His keynote presentation also criticized the iPad for not allowing third-party app multitasking, which is a feature that is set to be added to the iPad later this year in iPhone OS 4. iAd's million-dollar price tag for entry was likewise dinged, and the executive contrasted Google as an experienced advertising partner open to working with thousands of advertisers.
Dell Incorporated announced Tuesday that it will be entering the tablet market with, and we're not making this up, the Streak. Oh, fun with sounds. An Android-based handheld device with a 5-inch display. The company plans to launch the device in June in the UK with a later unspecified launch in the US market. The device includes Wi-Fi, Bluetooth even, and 3G connectivity, for which O2 will provide said connectivity. The Streak made its appearance in March in the guise of leaked photos to Engadget and Wired. Images released today by Dell differ slightly, and the company's announcement made Streak official, even if it didn't make it any prettier. The device is being built around a 1 gigahertz Snapdragon ARM processor and will include a 5-megapixel camera. Dell is touting flash support under Android 2.2, but that won't actually be available until, quote-unquote, later this year. In a statement eerily reminiscent of Apple CEO Steve Jobs' opening comments about the iPad, Ron Garrick, president of Dell's Communication Solutions Group, said in a statement, quote, "The Dell Streak hits the sweet spot between traditional smartphones and larger screen tablets." Unquote.
Huh.
And that sound means that it's time for the Context Machine within the Context Machine. This is where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
That's exactly what that means.
Where do you want to start?
Why don't we just work our way down the list?
All right.
Yeah, so we can start with
ChangeWave.
Thank you.
You bet. I'm here for you.
I appreciate that, because apparently I can't speak this week.
No worries. No worries. I can't smell, so, you know, we're good company.
So good thing it's not a video podcast.
Always. So, yeah. Now, the interesting thing I thought about the survey was to see these huge numbers of iPad owners who are reading newspapers and magazines. That I thought was the biggest news. Because I believe that Steve Jobs envisioned this device as saving the media, the news media industry in particular. And so far... So let's actually back up a little bit, because to call the iPad just an e-reader is, you know, a little bit questionable. Would you agree?
Oh, a little bit questionable? Yes.
Okay.
E-reader is a function that the iPad has, but it's not even something that's there by default. You actually have to go and download the e-book reader applications or magazine applications.
Right, or iBooks.
Right. That's what I was thinking. iBooks for the ebook reader app.
And at the same time, you know, you compare it to devices like the Nook or Kindle, and those are dedicated e-readers.
Right.
So the first thing is that ChangeWave basically found all these iPad owners who are identifying their device as e-readers, and I think that is interesting.
You know, yeah. Okay. So.
And it's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing. It is definitely an interesting thing. Now, I have noticed, and this is anecdotally, that since I picked up my iPad, that I am reading more newspapers online, and not so much magazines, because I'm really not excited with the formats that I've seen so far, but I know that'll change. But much to my surprise, I've started reading comic books on my iPad. So I guess in that sense, you know, if you want to think of comic books as a form of magazine format.
Well, yeah, it's certainly You know, it's within the world of print media traditionally.
Yes. So yeah. So in that sense, I am consuming more of what has traditionally been print media on my iPad, and on my iPhone, I didn't do that all that often. Although I had applications like, or still do, like the AP News app giving me push notifications, and the CNN app giving me push notifications. So when big headline things crop up, they just pop up and then I can go read them. So it was more of a reactionary type of news consumption on my iPhone. But on my iPad, it's more of a proactive news consumption.
Well, that makes sense. So here we have the iPad being compared to e-readers in general, some of which are dedicated device, although I'm guessing that other survey participants identified other devices as e-readers too, that weren't necessarily just dedicated e-readers, because we see such high percentages of iPad owners saying that they're reading this stuff compared to the other participants. Are you with me so far?
Yes.
And I think that is well, what that should say is for one thing that well, no, actually, I got to back up. I realize that I'm wrong, Jeff, because a lot of Kindle and Nook owners might just be reading books.
Okay, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. Okay.
Yeah, so, but you know, the whole newspaper and magazine thing, which, again, I think that Steve Jobs felt it was important to actually introduce a device that actually made consuming that kind of content a good experience, and that iPad owners are doing so in such high numbers shows that Apple's gotten that right, and other people have not.
I would have to agree with that.
Of course, they've also made it easier, way easier to find that content through both iBooks and through dedicated iPad apps.
Well, that's part of getting it right.
That is part of getting it right. That's a really good point.
Yeah. What I have found is that where previously the majority of the information consumption I was doing on my iPhone was through RSS reader apps.
Mm. Sure.
Now, I have those on my iPad, of course, because you know, I'm an information junkie. But a lot of that consumption that otherwise would have been relegated to my RSS readers is being done through dedicated news applications.
Right.
Yeah, like BBC or USA Today or New York Times, whatever. So, yeah, so that plays into the whole thing about it's much easier to get at that information and find the information that you want. I think Apple has done a very good job of creating a platform where finding and then accessing, consuming information is much easier compared to other portable platforms.
Right. Yeah, they have. And those numbers should be those number. Okay, so first of all, this is just a survey, and it is, you know, it's a limited survey. ChangeWave, I think, does a really good job with their surveys, but you know, the iPad has only been out for a month. So, I mean, the iPad isn't rewriting rules yet, but at the very least some new rules are being, you know, penciled in.
And it's also interesting to note that because the iPad has only been out a month, you're not going to see as much of a change in the overall market. But look at how much of a change you're seeing in the respondents. And that's after just a month.
That's after just a month. Now enter the flash debate. How many online periodicals are still using flash for their content delivery?
Well, of course, there's a lot. Flash is the dominant player in media delivery on the internet.
And yet the iPad is shaping up to be the dominant device to get that content. And I think that publishers are going to be looking at these numbers and going, holy heck. You know, we definitely have to dance to Apple's iTunes. Well, that'll work. We definitely have to dance to Apple's iTunes on this.
That's clever. I know it's totally unexpected.
It was an accident, but it
was totally clever. Yeah. Okay, so what I see happening over time, and I have a feeling that I've said something very similar on other podcasts that I've been on, but what I see happening over time is that will find a lot of these websites that have been delivering information with Flash over the next few years will start delivering that information either exclusively in other formats, or they will supplement what they're doing with Flash with other formats. And then eventually we'll see Flash become more of a specialized delivery tool, because there are things that it's really good at. But just your regular web browser interface sort of stuff, in most cases, that's not where you should be using Flash. So I think the iPad is going to be a catalyst in changing how companies use Flash for their content delivery.
Absolutely, absolutely. Especially if it is that dominant, the dominant device when it comes to consuming this kind of newspaper and magazine stuff. I would love to see numbers on books, by the way. I look forward to seeing that in the future.
I would like to see figures on what people are doing with books on the iPad. I finally bought a book on the iPad. And when I say finally, a month it's out, and I'm saying I finally bought a book. I've downloaded several free books to try out. And so the other day I thought, I really need to have a book on here. So I ended up buying a Stephen King novella that, it's like $5 or something like that. And so something small as far as investments go to play with and see what I think. And what I'm finding is that the iPad is a very capable ebook reader.
Good.
Yeah. And I don't see the Kindle that's sitting on the shelf collecting dust. I see it becoming a specialized device for other types of reading.
You should sell that while it still has a little bit of value.
It's a first generation. I don't think it has any value.
Ah.
But it's still a really cool thing. And I haven't tried reading extensively, extensively meaning for an extended period of time on my iPad, like reading a novel.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to try that and see what I think. But as far as readability goes for novels, I've done that with the Kindle, and I've been very pleased with it. So I'm curious how that's going to work for me with the iPad, especially since I have a rule for myself, which is the iPad doesn't go into the bedroom. Because I'm likely to use it for more than just reading in the bedroom, and I'd like to have
this
that break.
Family friendly, buddy.
Oh, we don't have an explicit tag.
No.
Oh,
I'm kidding, of course.
So, well, no. The thing is, I like to keep a distinct break between all of the technology that encompasses nearly every moment of my day, and then my relaxing time away from all of that. The iPad doesn't get to go in the bedroom because of that.
I see.
Yeah. And that said, I break the rule every night because my iPhone sits on my nightstand ready to go all the time. So I know I'm full of contradictions. I'm just a little enigma.
Wrapped in a burrito.
Yummy burritos.
All right, so another topic that we did at the top of the show was Google saying that they created Android to keep Apple from having too much control over the mobile devices market. What do you think of that crap?
I think that's quite a statement to make. So on one hand, Google is essentially saying, look, we're stepping up to the plate because we have to save you.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty ballsy to say that.
Well, it's the kind of thing that Apple has said repeatedly, or done at the very least, or hinted at that was their thought process.
Sure, but Apple has a track record here.
What, Google doesn't?
Google has a track record of being a very good internet search engine, and for rolling out beta after beta and using us as their testbed guinea pigs for their new products. And I know the next thing you're going to say is, doesn't Apple do the exact same thing with their products?
Well, Apple does that less so, but I look at Google's never-ending beta cycle as much less of a we're using you and much more of a we're willing to show this to you, but we're not willing to call it complete shipping is what I was going to say. We're not ready to call it a shipping product until it's right. And I'm actually personally okay with that, especially when it's, you know, most of the stuff is all free anyway.
You know,
but Gmail has been wildly successful, and I think that people like it.
Sure.
Google Maps, fantastic. Google itself, of course, fantastic. Their ad stuff has been fantastic. The services they offer to both small and large businesses has been very, very successful. So I mean,
yes.
You know, I think that they've had far more successes than they've had blunders, and I think they do have a bit of a track record. That track record isn't as long as Apple's is, but Google's rise coincides roughly with Steve Jobs' return to Apple in the first place, and so you know that's really when I think that we should be counting Apple's current streak of successes.
All right. So then based on what you said, you have tempered my view on this a little bit.
Yay.
So I will change my original statement to now be, it's very ballsy of Google to say this, and it would be equally ballsy of other successful companies to be saying the same thing in this position.
It's
a pretty
less ballsy
strong
for
statement.
Them to say it than it is for, say, Microsoft or Dell.
Okay. Yes,
you know,
that's
even
true.
HP, a company that I have at least a modicum of respect for.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll accept that. I still say it's ballsy, but.
Well, okay. and now all that said, I know that I was kind of playing devil's advocate to everything you were saying there, but I still think that it's roughly a load of crap too. I think that. If what Mr. Gandotra is saying isn't pure revisionism, then what he's saying is that they recognized that Apple was going to do this so correctly that they were going to own the market. And if Apple's going to own this particular market, I mean, you know, what is it that we need to be, that we really need to be saved from? I don't know. I don't buy it as Android's raison d'etre.
Well, the statement paints Apple as the bad guy and Google as the good guy.
It seems like they're working really hard to do.
Yeah, well, especially lately, it seems that Google is working really hard to make Apple look like the big bad evil empire, and here they are, the tech white knight coming in to save all of us from that.
Yeah, the big giant tech white knight that knows everything about us.
Right.
I know that the Google folks thought they were being clever with this. And despite me sort of rolling my eyes at that aspect, I think it's very interesting that they cast Steve Jobs as I know that the character has was it Big Brother in the commercial that the character on the screen actually had a name.
I don't remember the character's name, but so the 1984 commercial that Apple had when they introduced the Macintosh.
Where the chick in the Hooter shorts throws the hammer.
Hey man, in the 80s, that's what we wore as running shorts.
I was there.
And did you wear those shorts?
I had orange and white shorts in junior high because that was the color of my the colors of my school.
I think mine were blue. But yeah, so the point is, we were both subjected to having to wear those shorts, yes. And now our listeners, the ones that know what we look like, are thinking, "Oh dear God in heaven!"
Oh yeah, it was every bit as bad as you're imagining.
Yeah, it really was.
Anyway, be that as it may, so just to refresh everybody's memory, or maybe describe it if you are bizarrely not familiar with the 1984 commercial, all the skinheads are sitting there clearly. Droned out and mesmerized by the Big Brother figure in the on a big giant screen,
right,
saying, you know, one voice, one mind, something to that effect. I forget the exact quote. And chick comes running through with, and she's the only one that's wearing any color, and she hurls the hammer through the screen and breaks it. And Macintosh Y 1984 won't be like 1984. That's the commercial in a nutshell.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, and so they're casting Steve Jobs in the role of Big Brother on the screen with this one man, one phone, one carrier was the future.
You know, it's kind of interesting when I look at that and then look at what Google's doing. Now, on one hand, they have created many products that are good and integrate well together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Google had their way, we would be using all of their services and products.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing else.
Right.
So that sounds exactly like what they are pushing against with their statements, and it fits in perfectly with what Big Brother is saying in the 1984 commercial also.
Right. It would be as if Steve Ballmer had introduced Bing saying, "We created Bing for one reason, one reason only. We wanted to keep one company from dominating search in the future." And which would be ballsy for Microsoft to say, because of course they've always tried to be the one and only everything to everyone for everything.
Right. And they have tried to dominate the search industry on more than one occasion and are still failing.
Yeah, and they've managed to fail on that. So, I don't know. I find it, you know, Apple is a corporation. And I think that most people who listen to our podcast and read our site have at one time or another personified Apple and wanted to think of Apple as, you know, the good guy, the company that was doing things for the right reasons. I think we've all gone through a phase, if not are still in that phase. I personally am no longer in that phase because I realized that as a corporation that they're going to do things that are in the best interest of the corporation. But it's hard for me to find a good guy in this battle between Microsoft and Google. I'm sorry, oops, between Apple and Google. Wow.
that was kind of interesting.
With the exception that I prefer Apple's user experience for iPhone OS devices to the user experience that I have had a limited exposure to on Android.
Okay. Now, having played with both, what I found is that the iPhone OS, for me, is a superior experience. And the problems that I have with Android OS fall squarely in the camp of the problems that I have with Microsoft and their operating system, which is you have an operating system that anyone can use. And so then you have all of these companies creating devices that use the operating system in different ways and are using different versions of the operating system, and you lose that consistency of user experience from one device to the next. And it just plays into the whole thing where Apple controls the entire widget, and so they make a device that works fairly elegantly.
Platform.
Yeah, it's the whole unified experience, whereas you get the fragmented experience with Android, just like you get that fragmented experience with Windows.
Right. And of course, the benefits of that Android approach are a multitudinous choice of items or products and choices, and as well as cheaper hardware. And that's fine. I want Apple to have that, you know, some kind of competition one way or another. Although, quite frankly, at this point, I'm more interested in what HP is going to do with WebOS than I am. That I am interested in what Android's going to be doing in the future.
You know, that could turn out to be really interesting because HP is now in a position where they can do what Apple is doing and create the unified product.
Right. Yeah. They alone, it'll be BlackBerry and HP and Apple that are basically going for that are going to be in the position to be battling it out for proprietary solutions. And I'm so excited that we have more than one company doing proprietary solutions. You know, I wish there were computers competing with the Mac that were proprietary. Because
the Amiga's long gone, sadly. But
yeah, and so is, you know, every other competitor, because Microsoft successfully killed them all off. But so far in this market, we've got two, you know, of course, Research in Motion with BlackBerry is still bigger than Apple with iPhone, and is, I think, likely to remain that way for some time to come. And although, you know what, it kind of wouldn't surprise me if HP focused on WebOS more with tablets than they did with smartphones, but we'll have to see.
I can see that happening. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, because I have no idea if HP wants to be in the smartphone business. I mean, they probably do, but we just don't know.
Yeah, well, I think going into the tablet device business would probably be an easier move for them, and
yes,
probably a more lucrative move, because they wouldn't have to do what every other cell company or cell hardware maker is doing, which is figure out how to deal with all the different types of networks and all the different carriers and get all those deals going, when they can just make their tablet and sell it to whoever.
But if they did have a smartphone, they would be able to offer a comprehensive solution to corporations.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
they can ensure that their WebOS device was working with their Windows networks. Or,
yeah,
or for that matter, their Unix networks that they also still peddle.
Oh, yeah. Well, from what I understand, HP's Unix network solutions for big businesses, mm-hmm, that's a very big business for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And they do a lot of IT stuff. So it would give the company a very interesting competitive advantage to be able to offer comprehensive solutions that are absolutely and positively integrated, and, you know, which would really put them on footing to compete more with Research in Motion than with Apple's iPhone. But that's another point.
Yeah, but still, the point is, we have this interesting situation brewing now, where HP can become, like Apple, a unified all-in-one product provider.
Whereas Google is becoming more like Microsoft.
Yes, absolutely.
With a license to all approach with Chrome OS and Android OS.
Right, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But I have a feeling that fragmentation that comes along with offering Android to anyone that wants to play with it is going to lead to confusion, and while they'll be able to maintain a lot of the market simply because there'll be so many companies making devices with their OS, that in the end there will be a lot of people that will look at what Google is offering the same way they look at what Microsoft is offering, which is, it's very confusing, I'm not sure what I'm getting.
Right.
Whereas with the iPhone, and then potentially with what HP can do with WebOS, it'll be very clear what you're getting.
Hey, wait a minute. How come you guys don't ever talk about Ken? Ken's a real...
That was Steve. I had security pull him out.
I thought that we deactivated his TMO Towers key.
I just love the vision of Steve Ballmer poking his head in, yelling at us for not talking about Ken. That's just funny. It's completely silly, but funny. So in the meanwhile, we've got these two companies, Google and Apple, two companies that I like their products. I love Google Search Engine. I love Google Analytics. I don't use Gmail, but that's just because I haven't needed it. I like Google Docs, even though, again, I don't really use them a whole lot, but at least, you know, I know that they're there and I could use them if I wanted to. And of course, I like Apple's product line, and I like Apple's user experience. And man, I hate to see these guys fighting. It just seems it seems stupid to me. I wonder what it is that Google felt threatened with because if you remember, the very first, the only company allowed into iPhone originally was Google.
Right.
With Google Maps. And, you know, what is it that they saw that scared them to think that they weren't going to be able to sell advertising on this platform? They certainly didn't see iAd coming. There's no way.
Of course not. I mean, there's no way they could have seen that coming. Okay, so when they saw where the iPhone was going, they probably knew that the whole mobile device market was going to become a very, very big and very important thing moving forward. And they wanted to have a bigger stake in what happened in that market.
Right.
And to have that bigger stake, they need to have Android.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Android serves one purpose. Android serves, let me rephrase this, the most important purpose that Android serves is to make sure that Google has a vehicle for selling ads.
Right.
Right, because, products that are developed for Android, you know, they've got basically their fingers in the pie one way or another. But I don't. There's nothing to keep. There's nothing to keep Google. I don't know. I actually.
Okay, so keep in mind.
I'm speechless. That's a rare event.
It is, and I'm jumping in so people don't realize that you're speechless.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone will notice.
Yeah.
All right, so keep in mind, Android is available to developers for free. So Google does not make money directly from companies using Android as their platform for their mobile devices.
Right.
So that means that Android is a tool to drive revenue in some other part of the company. So what part of the company would that be? Advertising sales.
Right, of course.
Yeah. So it goes back to Google realized that they were not going to be able to have as big a chunk of the online ad search revenue market as they could if they let Apple completely dominate it.
I guess, but if they just remained Apple's go-to partner for things like Maps and search and YouTube and everything else, Apple wouldn't have needed to get into this business. I personally believe that Apple bought Quattro Wireless and bought PlaySpace, the GPS mapping company.
Right.
And all of the other companies that they've been buying that clearly cover services that Google currently provides for iPhone. I personally think they only did that because Steve basically wants to sock it to Google for having betrayed him. And so, you know, if Google hadn't done the betrayal, then they would have been able to remain Apple's good partner, it seems to me. I mean, I, of course, don't actually know what happened between the companies, but we do know that the Google CEO Eric Schmidt and Apple CEO Steve Jobs still hang out together.
Right.
So, I mean, it seems like there's a chicken and egg thing here, and that Google might have been doing the nasty with the chicken to make the eggs start incubating or something. I don't know. I really did not actually mean that to sound like it did.
And yet it did. Okay, so how about if I rephrase it as, it may very well have become a self-fulfilling prophecy where Google thought, oh, Apple's going to try and dominate all of this stuff instead of working with us as a partner. We need to start doing our own thing. Apple finds out and goes, oh, yeah, well, screw you. We're going to start doing our own thing and try and dominate all of it.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. And I wish they could continue to play well together.
You know, I think in some areas they will, and in other areas they won't. Just like if you look at Apple and Adobe right now, there's all kinds of people saying, oh, my God, the whole market's going to explode and fall apart. No, just because they're pissed off and fighting in one area, it doesn't mean that their entire relationship is going to fall apart. It's just they're having one little bitchy area and the rest will be fine. And right now the whole thing with Google, okay, maybe there's a little bit more of it that they're kind of bitchy about, but still, I think in the long run, they'll still have business ties and it'll be fine. It'll just, for now, be kind of a soap opera.
All of this said, by the way, I would be very interested to see any search engine that Apple felt was good enough to compete. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be fun, because if it's something that Apple thought was good enough to compete, that would mean that it has to be really, really good.
So, because we're already yakking away, let's go to Smile on Your Mac. Puts a smile on your Mac. Smile.
You know, I'm thinking that that Gene from Smile on My Mac should hire you to write jingles for them.
Maybe. Although, yeah, I might end up having to melodyne that because my voice is pretty shot.
Now,
I'm just saying.
That was just a proof of concept, okay?
That's the same. Actually, it's the same melody that I unveiled several months ago when we joked about having a jingle.
Yeah, and see, that just shows that it's a very versatile melody. Yeah, so anyhow, our sponsor this week is Smile on My Mac. And we
Smile.
Have some...
and Text Expander Touch.
Yes, and Text Expander Touch is one of those applications that I actually really do use all the time. And for those listeners that aren't familiar with Text Expander Touch, it's a really cool application for the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad that will take little like abbreviations, custom abbreviations that you make. When you type them, then they magically grow into full words or phrases that that you've preset. So like, you know, if I wanted to type Apple Context Machine over and over, maybe I create a little shortcut that's just ACM, and when I type that, it automatically expands out and becomes Apple Context Machine.
Right, which is awesome.
Yeah, so it's great for typing the things that you have to type over and over and over, making sure that you don't have errors because it always types it the same for you, so you don't have to worry about that. And the cool thing is, even though there isn't the third-party multitasking yet, They came up with this really clever idea where they developed an SDK that other app developers can use to tie in to your little abbreviation or snippet database. So you can use this in other applications on your iPhone or your iPad.
There's 26 apps out there that have already done this.
That's very cool. And
yeah, super cool.
Yeah, so as an example, I use Write Room on my iPhone, And so I can type my little abbreviations, my snippets on my in Write Room, and they automatically expand out for me. So it's cool. It's kind of like being able to do the same thing on my Mac because I use Text Expander there too, and you can synchronize your snippets between locations,
which is super handy.
Yes. So the same shortcuts that I use on my Mac, I can use on my iPhone.
Right. Right. Which is handy. And so if you're a developer, you should definitely check out Text Expander Touch. And if you're an iPhone or iPad or iPod Touch user, check out all the apps that'll take advantage of this, because that's cool. And there's 26 of them. Twitter for iPhone, Simply Tweet, or SMS Touch, Taskly Notebooks, Simple Note, Amateur as I Thoughts, Attendance. I mean, there's a whole bunch of apps that do this, and probably more on the way. I don't know that for sure, but maybe.
Well, I would assume there's more on the way because once people realize just how useful it is for them, they start contacting the app developers for the other apps that they use and saying, "Why don't I have Text Expander Touch support?" And it's easy to add in, I assume. I say that not being a developer,
you know, because we're coders. Oh yeah, it's a breeze.
Yeah.
We don't know. but knowing the folks at Smile on My Mac, I imagine they've made it as easy as it can be. But I mean, if you have any questions, ask them.
Right, because our answer will always be, oh, it's easy, just do it.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Let's see what's on our page. Let's see.
Oh, that's right. We have a special page at the Smile on My Mac website.
We do, and it's still disc label.
Well, disc label's cool.
Disc label is awesome. It's a really cool app, but we are talking about Text Expander. Nonetheless, there's a 20% discount if you go to smileonmymac.com/AWR.
Which is our retro.
Which is our retro thing, yeah. We'll get that all synced up at some point. But we love the folks at Smile on My Mac. We would appreciate it if you would show them support, and we would appreciate it if you visited our special URL, smileonmymac.com/AWR. Now, we have one more topic, and I don't think we're going to have a ton to say, just some giggling.
Okay, which topic do we have left?
The Dell Streak.
Oh, that's right. Okay, see, that's how much of an impact it made on me. I forgot we talked about it on the show already.
So let's start with the name. It's just a dumb name. I mean, it evokes... I mean, yeah, I know that not everybody remembers the Streak, but... You know, anyone who's probably over 35 remembers the Streak.
Right. And, okay, so when I hear the name, and then, of course, the song, and I just get this quote bouncing around in my head, and it's the CEO of the company saying, they should just sell off all the stock and give the money back to their shareholders.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, really, who in their marketing department thought this was going to be a good name?
I don't know. I don't even get it, because it's not like it's, I don't know, something called the Streak should at the very least be tiny. It like should be like super slim.
Yeah, and this is kind of blocky.
Yeah, it's blocky and you know, thick. And one of our readers pointed out that if you're holding it, your thumbs are going to cover the speaker, the speakers, and I don't know. And to call, one of the quotes I didn't include, it wasn't an actual quote, it's just the company's verbiage in their press releases, they called it a spacious 5-inch display.
Oh, that is awesome.
Spacious 5-inch display. And then, of course, Ron Garik's quote, the Dell Streak hits the sweet spot between traditional smartphones and larger screen tablets. Well, I mean, really? What kind of I mean, to me, the iPad, because what Steve Jobs and Tim Cook and Phil Schiller talked about was that the iPad basically, you know, should be able to do things better than smartphones and better than a laptop, and they talk about the size of the device being that sweet spot between, you know, netbooks and laptops and smartphones. And I mean, is anyone even looking for a sweet spot between a smartphone and a tablet?
If you're looking for a sweet spot between your smartphone and your tablet, I'm thinking you've been buying the wrong smartphones and tablets.
Yeah.
Because that the gap that's in there for a product needs to be something realistically between the smartphone and, say, the netbook. And does that sound kind of familiar?
Right, yeah. Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
It's, don't get me wrong, I'm happy, I'm, you know, Dell should make an Android-based tablet. I mean, they should. It should be, you know, it's yet another product that they can sell for a little bit and then stop selling later. It's what they do in their own special way.
It's how they mark their territory.
It is. And, I mean, I don't blame... I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't blame them for entering this market, but to me, they should bloody well introduce a full-size Android-based tablet and try to sell it to companies.
Yeah. Okay, and a 5-inch screen... In my opinion, that doesn't qualify as a tablet.
No, it's too big. Well, I don't know that they called it a tablet.
I thought they did.
Well, I mean, we said that they were entering the tablet market. Even if they did, I don't remember off the top of my head, and I don't have the press release in front of me. But even if they did, 5 inches is too big to put in your pocket, and it's too small to care about.
Okay, there's a joke for 12-year-olds in there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure. I suspect that the streak will be short-lived, like Dell's MP3 player, like Dell's smartphone that they tried to do. I suspect that this will be a short-lived product. At the very least, it will be replaced by... I think that Dell could do well, or better at least, with a full-size tablet that they were specifically marketing towards IT departments.
Okay, so
that's
one thing
where the strength is.
Yeah, that I can see that more than this device. And one thing that you need to keep in mind with Dell is that is not a company that innovates.
No,
Dell is a company that has specialized in just-in-time PC manufacturing and delivery. So they can do the assembly line, stamp it out, generic, PC thing. Really well. I mean, that's how they got to be who
they are. They've innovated on the manufacturing and delivery side.
Okay, there you go.
Their whole direct ordering, direct marketing business model in the first place was, in fact, very innovative.
Right. That's exactly right. And that's what allowed them to grow the way they have. They don't develop innovative computers.
Yeah, they're not innovative on the hardware side. They're not innovative on the... on the technology side, they're innovative on the manufacturing side.
Right. And I'm not saying that as a slam to Dell. It's just that's their business model. And when they deviate from their what they do best, then they end up making things like their own smartphone or their own MP3 player or now their own tablet-ish sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not their strong suit.
I like tablet-ish. I like that. That's good.
Feel free to use that anytime you want.
I'm going to use it right now. Tabletish.
Okay.
All right. So that's the Dell streak, and I don't think I have any more to say about it.
Well, the only thing I have to add to that is buy one when you can, because they may be collector's items really quick.
Yeah.
I want to see people wearing T-shirts now that say tablet-ish.
I could sell the Newton in my closet for more than the streak is going to sell brand new.
You probably could.
No, I definitely could.
Which model do you have?
We have the 210 was the last one, wasn't it?
2100.
2100. Good lord, yes, 2100.
Oh man, I have a 130.
Oh, well, that's cool, too.
It is.
In its own special way.
It is. Well, that's the first one that had the good handwriting recognition.
Take us out.
Oh, yeah, that's what I do. If you have anything to comment on, add or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And you can feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow the cobwebs in my account at twitter.com/tmobrian, Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. That's all for this week. And, of course, our theme song is Push Me Under by the Atomic Love Bombs.
That's right. And our special Foley artist is Melissa.
Pew, pew.
Yes, thank you, Melissa.
Yeah, you rock. And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
The falling rain is creeping. go, we'll try by the light.